I think it's a big deal. I think at the same time, it's also something that I keep in mind of getting guys the football, especially in one-on-one scenarios. You know, we have different guys that make plays. I think there's definitely at times in games where, hey, I'm gonna tell you, hey, if you're one-on-one next time, I'm coming your way. You know, I told KB that later in the game that I need to give him some more chances. He's a good player for us. So little things like that. I care about. Them guys want the football, and they want the football, and try to feed them all.
Final hour of the Lions and Shine show. And we started at noon talking Patriots.
Yes, we
and
did.
And we basically spent the whole hour being honest but negative about the Patriots and Bruins. If you missed any of that, the Odyssey app is free. You can find it on Apple Podcasts. Of course, you shouldn't have missed it because Lions and Shine is a movement, not a show. But when I look at this Patriots team now, Shine, there's a lot of things to be negative about, and rightfully so, right? They're a bad team in a bad place. I think the one thing that you can hang on to, and when I say you, I mean all of us, Drake May has gotten better from the time they drafted him to training camp,
yep,
from training camp beginning to end, and from the end of training camp to his first game, and then his first start to his second start. He's gotten progressively better, and to me, Shine, he looks like a guy that could be the future of the team.
Yeah, I would venture to say I'm very confident that he will be a legitimate top 12 quarterback in the NFL over the next year or so. Like, he's that good. He's that talented. I think he has that capability. He's already seeing defenses better than Jacoby Brissett, which is why I wanted to start him off the get-go. But, you know, the Patriots had their quote-unquote plans, so that didn't happen. But he's already showing you that he can figure out the protections. He can switch out of plays if he needs to. I think even Arkin and Hart asked about that, how much creativity he has at the line of scrimmage. And he said, he's like, right now, like, he's like, I don't really have a ton. I'm just kind of going to the line and calling what AVP has. And if he gives me a secondary play to check out into, like a run or whatever like that, like, that's what we do. And he's like, but other than that, I get up there and I call the play and run the play. And I think he's done a really good job, right? In that first week, you saw he had the jitters, especially that first quarter and a half.
That first interception just felt like nerves to me.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It was just nerves. He sailed it. It was bad footwork. That's going to happen. But then after that two-minute drive that resulted in the Kayshon Boutte 50-yard touchdown, since then, it has been all systems go. He had, in my opinion, like three bad throws in that Jaguars game. That's it. And he threw the ball like 37 times.
Yeah.
One of them was that near interception on the crossing route.
Was that to Bourne?
The shallow crosser. That was almost like a pick six.
Yeah, I think it was in Bourne's vicinity.
Might have been Bourne. It was either Bourne, or Henry.
It might have been Henry.
And it was just kind of like a shallow crosser. He threw off his back foot instead of stepping into the throw. Ball was late behind the receiver. Luckily, the receiver broke it up. Wasn't an interception. He got lucky with that one. But then outside of that, you look at the Hooper throw towards the end zone. That to me was like a miscommunication because it felt like Drake was throwing it, expecting Hooper to sit. He didn't sit. He ran the corner route. So like that was a bit of a miscommunication. I don't know if that was on Drake or on Hooper. I don't know what the play call was. So I can't really determine that. So I'd put at least 50% of the blame on him there. And then outside of that, he had like one bad throw the rest of the way. His footwork looks great. His presence in the pocket looks good, especially post strip sack in that first game. Last week, he didn't really have those moments as much. I love what I see from Drake May, and it is encouraging to know that, like, oh man, this kid's just scratching the surface. Like, he's just off and running. And he started better than Caleb Williams did his first 2 weeks. And now you see how good Caleb Williams has played. Like, Caleb Williams is lighting it up. If you can get that from Drake May, that kind of progression, and it's not always linear, but if you hope that it goes in that direction, like, man, you could be cooking with gas before the season's out.
And I think if you're the Patriots, right, you need that foundational piece because they went into last offseason
and nothing else.
And we were like, all right, they have a good defense, but they have a huge need at quarterback, tackle, and receiver. And so far, look, and Barmore's out. Peppers is out for different reasons. Bentley's injured. I think the defense long term will be pretty good. It's terrible right now, but I think like next year, the year after, it can be pretty good. But offensively, you still have the huge need at offensive tackle. Your offensive tackle play has been abysmal most of the year. You still have a big need at number one receiver because I like Jalen Polk, but I think his ceiling, he's been bad so far.
Yep.
I like the pick at the time, but I think his ceiling still is a number two guy.
Yeah, it's the Myers kind of role.
Yeah, so you still have that hole at one. But if you can sit there and say, okay, we have the guy at the most important position, that's the encouraging piece of it. Because when you look at how May has played, my concerns in training camp were under center snaps, feeling the speed of defenses, empty protections, and I didn't even think of run checks, but that's something May mentioned in his press conference last week. And you look at him a couple games in. The run game has been terrible, but I don't know if that's a run check issue.
No,
I don't think so. And then protection-wise, right? First of all, their empty protection is never going to be great because their O-line isn't good. Yeah. But that was something he struggled with in camp. His first game against Houston, the strip sack was on empty protection, so that was concerning to me. But then last week against Jacksonville, albeit not as nearly as good of a defense, you didn't really have those issues in empty protection, right? So, I mean, he got sacked twice, but okay, sacked twice. But no interceptions, didn't get strip sacked. It didn't feel like he was clueless in empty protection. And again, these are the things you look for, because with a guy like Drake May, I mean, look, Jaden Daniels had, what, 55 starts in college. Bo Nix had 60. Caleb Williams won a Heisman. May was going to come in with the most to work on. So has he worked on those things? And I feel like we've seen, again, to your point, not fully linear, but we've seen him progress in these things, and he's not screwing up the same things week after week or month after month.
And I think that also makes the Alex Van Pelt discussion even more difficult to have.
That's a good point.
Because I think he's doing a really good job with Drake. I just think play call wise, he sucks. Like, I think AVP is just built to be a quarterback's coach. Some guys are just built for certain roles. Some guys aren't head coaches. They're just coordinators.
Like Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, and stuff like that. Yeah, I think if McDaniels was the offensive coordinator right now, this team, this offense would be awesome. I think because of the way Josh schemes it up and kind of manufactures offense at times, I think it would help a rookie quarterback a lot. I mean, you saw it in Max rookie year. I think that
sixth in the league points per game.
He makes it easy. And I also think the other encouraging thing too is you mentioned the offensive line. Like, Ben Brown came in and there has been zero issues between Drake and Ben Brown. Like, the connection between the two of them was good right away. Ben Brown has been your best offensive lineman since he stepped in the door. And he stepped in the door, what, 18 days ago? Like, and he has been.
Say that again at the beginning of September.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like.
And I think, like, the Washington preseason game, what was it? Nick Leverett in May, there was two fumbled snaps on the same drive.
And now Leverett's not even on the team.
Right. And but if that's not going to happen with Ben Brown, like, but that's another thing, credit to May, like, he's gotten better in the with those. And I think there's still things to work on. Like, it's tough because you said the offense would be awesome if McDaniels was here.
I don't know if awesome's probably an exaggeration.
Sure,
but
it would be better.
They would be
better.
Good.
And I think, like, that's where the AVP thing is interesting, because I look at AVP and I'm like, schematically, okay, do things really build off each other? And that's the thing, because when you have an offense,
that infuriates me.
And you look at, what did we hear? Oh, it's going to be wide zone offense. And then in the summer, they weren't really running it well. And then I'm down at camp and I'm like, all right, well, they're running like power and gap scheme stuff. Like, okay, well, if they're good at that, fine. But then a lot of their play action plays, it's like, they play action off zone, but if they're not good at zone, like, it didn't felt like, and even their pass game concepts, and part of it was the limitations, I think, of Brissett, but it never felt like he schemed guys open, even with Brissett. Maybe that one deep shot against Miami that Brissett missed to Demario Douglas, but other than that, did we really see guys with a lot of space to operate?
No, but, and I think that it lends perfect into the discussion we had earlier about that play that was kind of like a hospital ball to Jalen Polk, right? Like, to me, that's just bad play design. Like, I don't think watching the All-22, it doesn't look like the routes were bad. It just looks like the spacing is terrible. Because it's just a normal levels concept. That's it. That's what it's supposed to be. And yet the guys that are supposed to be in the intermediate and the deep are, like, on top of each other.
Right.
And so to me, that screams. It didn't look like Henry got disrupted at all on his route. It didn't look like Polk got disrupted much on his. And so it felt like that was a spacing issue. And that's what has bugged me the most about AVP is the design of this. It feels like there's no rhyme or reason to it. The only time there's ever rhyme or reason to the offense is when Drake is back there in empty and he's just kind of conducting the orchestra. And like those 2-minute drills where he's kind of moving quick, you have to have the play calls ahead of time, you have to get them moving, and he looks comfortable and he looks like he knows what he's doing. Whereas, you know, you come out on the next drive, you're up 10-0, and you run the ball twice into the offensive line. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and
you've been throwing the ball all game. Why are you stopping?
And that's something, too, where I think the biggest issue with their offense is they don't have enough talent, okay?
But sure.
It hasn't felt like they've had a moment or a game this year where they've been able to keep a defense off balance. Even one more talented than them. Like, you look at the Jets game,
right? They
just load
the box all day.
Like, the Jets game, they came out and they said, oh, we want to run a bunch of play action. But the first 2 weeks, they had actually run the ball really well. And so Stevenson fumbled in the third quarter of the Jets game, which was bad. But that was only his sixth carry of the game.
Yeah.
Like, why are you waiting until the third quarter to get your best player?
Well, it's because they were too busy feeding it to Pop Douglas in the passing game.
Sure. And then, like you mentioned, those plays against the Jaguars where, okay, you move the ball well down the field, and then you run two straight right up the middle plays that get you nowhere. Now it's third and long. You're behind the sticks. And it just feels like they haven't kept anybody off balance. And the biggest question surrounding the Van Pelt discussion I want to know is there's him, there's McAdoo, and there's McCartney. Who's been the guy that's really been working with May on his development?
That's a good question.
Because if it's not been Van Pelt,
It's McCartney and McAdoo, then like, what is Van Pelt even doing?
But then the other side of this too, when it comes to their OC position, like Hunter Henry's been here 4 years and he's had four different OCs.
Yeah,
that's what bad.
Tough.
Like, there's a lot surrounding the Patriots right now that 10 years ago, like, people would laugh at the Jets for doing that. Like, things bad organizations do, and one of them is multiple offensive coordinators with young quarterbacks every year.
I think the perfect example of that is Baker Mayfield, right? In Cleveland, He went through like four or five different offensive coordinators in his first few years, and then all of a sudden he bounces around, he goes to Carolina, ends up at the Rams, gets off the plane, wins a game, he gets to spend some time with Sean McVay, and then he goes to Tampa, and Dave Canales is pretty good, but they incorporated a lot of what he liked doing with McVay. And then what happens when Canales leaves? They bring in Liam Cohen, who was working with Sean McVay, so that everything stayed at least similar. Yeah, Liam Cohen, by the way, awesome play caller. Love what he's doing.
I saw him present at a coaching conference once. He's the real deal.
Yeah. Like,
he's legit.
What he has done with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans this year, and unfortunate what happened to Godwin, but what he had done to this point with them and Baker was really, really good. And like, the way he was mixing up the running backs, and you mix up the tempo, and you mix up the, it's just, there was none of that here. And it feels like there's no building towards anything with AVP. I don't feel like he sets up plays later in the game with something he does early in the game. Like, it's just, it feels like there's no rhyme or reason.
And like, formationally, especially when you have a lack of talent.
That's so basic.
They use some motion. I think they probably should use a little more.
Way more.
But they don't, to me, they don't use enough bunch sets. They don't use enough stuff like that to get guys open.
The other thing, too, Drake May coming out of college, he had 16 rushing touchdowns. How many design quarterback runs has he had? Under Alex Van Pelt?
Off the top of my head, none.
Zero.
They're all scrambles, right? Yeah,
the
I was going to say
zero.
Off the top of my head. Yeah.
It's like, dude, this is one of the things, like, that's something that could help your run game, right? They load the box, give him a read option, give him something, like, he's comfortable with that. It's stuff he did in college, it's stuff he understands how to do, he understands the concept, like, allow him to cook a little bit, like, you don't need to just, like, under center, single back, here you go, Ramondre, right into the ass of the guard, and boom, tackled, 1 yard gain, like, what are we doing?
Well, and I think that's a larger discussion, too, because I think a good coach he has a scheme, but then he will tailor that to what he has in front of him with the players. Like, we mentioned McDaniels earlier, okay? They went from, hey, we have Randy Moss and Welker, and we're going to spread it out and throw it everywhere and dominate on the outside and the perimeter, but then go to the slot with Welker, to then when he came back and they had Gronkowski and Edelman and all that, we're going to cut you to death in the middle of the field in the seams and all that.
Well, and then even beyond that, Tom Brady leaves and it's Cam Newton. And what are you? You're a power running team, read option, constant. You're playing to Cam's strengths.
Yeah. And then Mac comes in and you go back to, hey, we're going to go play action. We're going to spread things out a little bit more. But they did a good job with Mac under McDaniels of play action, quick option throw.
Yeah.
Like, somebody's there, you know, I don't want to say hot route, but like, play action, somebody's right there. It feels like the Patriots are trying to make May and some of these guys fit to Van Pelt in that scheme.
100%.
More than they're adapting it to, hey, Kendrick Bourne's pretty good on the catch and run. Let's get him the ball on a three-step slant and let him run and stuff like that.
Like, good play callers have their basics for what they want to do, right? A guy like Kyle Shanahan knows what he wants to do with an offense. But then when he gets players like Deebo Samuel, it's like, I just got to give him the ball and let him work.
Him a running
so it's
back,
like, oh, let's make him a running back. Like, and you build around that. Oh, CMC's in our offense now. Oh, we can run all the stuff we normally run. Oh, but here's a play action. Here's different screens that we've never run before because that's what he's good at. And let's split him out wide and have him run actual routes because he's basically a receiver. Like, it's good play callers have their basics, but then build off of that based on the talent and the players that they have around them. And it doesn't feel like that. It feels like you're trying to stick a round peg in a square hole.
Yeah, I think and that's why, again, I think the big question I would like answered by the end of the season, who's the guy developing May?
Yeah.
If it's Van Pelt, all right, keep it together and rolling. If it's not, then maybe, and I don't think they'll make any sort of adjustment, though, because do you really want to have another new OC? I don't know if
I do.
I mean, like, no, I hear you, but I...
Because wouldn't you rather, like, I would just rather get a West Coast offense guy in here and just let them kind of cook with Drake. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I'm like, looking back on it, I'm like, man, Cliff Kingsbury might have been like the perfect fit here. And like he spent that year in Thailand,
pretty
then he goes and just
Washington.
He's cooking up in the lab with Caleb Williams for a year at USC, and then he goes to Washington and he's like one of the best play callers in football. It doesn't matter if Jaden Daniels gets hurt. Let's just go cook with Marcus Mariota real quick. And so it's infuriating to watch something like that and be like, man, there were guys like that out there.
And one last point. I know we got to go to break here, but their first choice for OC was Nick Haley, and they offered him a lot of money and he turned it down. But that is a system that's a lot different than Van Pelt. And I know everyone thinks, oh, it's the McVay, all that, but Nick Haley is a Patriots guy.
He's a McDaniels guy.
Who is a McDaniels guy who is also a McVay guy who would blend those together.
I would have loved to see
that. That's a much different system, I think, or at least different system than what they would run now.
It would have been a little bit more difficult, though, because, again, that's another young guy that you're bringing in, and then it's just all young coaches that have never done it before. And so that's why I almost would have rathered a guy who had done it before. But, again, I mean, it's just second-guessing at this point.
We got a trend right now with Joe Braverman, and when we come back, believe it or not, there is a Patriots game tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about that.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Final injury report is out as the Patriots get ready to welcome the Jets to town. Receiver Jalen Polk logged all DNPs. He's already been ruled out due to a concussion. Layden Robinson also ruled out. He's dealing with an ankle injury. Notable players that are questionable, Daniel Okwale, Jonathan Jones, Fedarian Lowe, Sidy Sow, and Keon White. For New York, starting guard Elijah Vera Tucker has been ruled out with an ankle injury, and starting right tackle Morgan Moses is questionable with a knee injury. Pats and Jets kick it off from Gillette tomorrow at 1 in the afternoon. Celtics look to move to 3-0 to start the season tonight. They're in Detroit to take on the Pistons. The team has already ruled out Sam Hauser for a second straight game with low back pain. Tip-off from the Motor City is scheduled for 7 o'clock. Also at 7 o'clock, the Bruins will try and break their 3-game losing streak tonight at home against the Maple Leafs. Game 1 of the World Series went to the Dodgers with a thrilling 6-3 win in 10 innings over the Yankees. Freddie Freeman hit the first-ever walk-off Grand Slam in World Series history. Game 2 from Dodger Stadium will be tonight. First pitch at 8:08. Carlos Rodon versus Yoshinobu Yamamoto is your pitching matchup. Some Sox news that also came in. Tyler O'Neill has won the MLB Players Association American League Comeback Player of the Year. O'Neill is a pending free agent. Boston College football fell to Louisville last night 31-27. It's now their third straight loss for the Eagles after they were up 27-10 midway through the third quarter. At 4-4, BC will welcome Syracuse to Alumni Stadium 2 weeks from today on November 9th. Meanwhile, the college football Saturday slate includes 21st-ranked Missouri against 15th-ranked Alabama. You can listen to Westwood One's coverage from Tuscaloosa right here on 93.7 WEEI-FM beginning at 3. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
I know there are players in the locker room who sort of, you know, felt challenged by some of your commentary after the game. How would you describe the intensity that you saw from players at practice this week?
My job is always to challenge these guys and always show them, you know, what it is. What I will say is, like, we've had a good week of practice. We've had good weeks of practice, and now it just has to show up on Sunday.
Speaking of showing up on Sunday, Chris Schein, you'll be here tomorrow with WEI's Football Sunday, 10 a.m.
That's the plan. Currently a little under the weather, so I'm going to try and power through. Hopefully I can get some antibiotics in my system later this afternoon and be good to go for the morning. But currently listed as questionable, like half the Patriots roster.
Yeah, this is your Jordan flu game?
It's pretty close. Yeah. I don't know what it is. So, like 2 weeks ago, I was sick every morning on the Greg Hill Show. And so I was just kind of powering through, doing my job behind the glass. So, you know, let everybody shine and do their thing. And me just press the buttons and I powered through. Thought I kicked it. Hadn't kicked it. And then last night I got that, you know, every once in a while you get that twinge in the back of your throat and you're like, yeah, I'm about to get sick.
Yeah.
I had that last night. I woke up this morning and my head feels like it weighs 1,000 pounds. But we're hanging out here, and as many people in the Twitch chat on the text line make fun of me, I have a bobblehead, so you can imagine how much that I'm like tipping over. I'm so heavy in the head right now, but you know, we're battling through and we're gonna power through. We're gonna come out the other side of this all right.
By the way, there was one text on the text line you said that stood out to you about Patriots play calling.
I thought it was interesting from the 978. Where are the bootlegs and play actions? It's tired, but now well known that you don't actually have to run the ball well to establish play action, but they still don't even use it against the loaded boxes, which is true and hilarious to me because a guy like Arthur Smith, who I believe is a good offensive coordinator, terrible head coach, he was awful in Atlanta, but really good in Tennessee, and I think he's been good in Pittsburgh, they make the quarterback switch from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson, and they completely changed the offense overnight. Very first play of the game, it's like the classic John Gruden, Spider 2, Y banana, play action, boom, hit the fullback slash tight end out in the flat, get 7 yards, move the chains, do what Russell Wilson does best. And like, That's what they did, and they did it throughout the entire game, and they kicked the crap out of the Jets.
Feeling really nicey.
I'm feeling real nicey about the Pittsburgh
those
offense.
Those TikToks are kind of interesting.
Oh, God, I love Gruden. Yeah. There's very few people in this world I love as much as I love John Gruden. And I look at this, and I'm just like, where is it from the Patriots? Like, where is the – they did it once, and again, it was on that levels concept that Drake May kind of threw a hospital ball on because of awful spacing. That was a play, great play action. It was supposed to be a good play design. Terrible route design, and it just ended up being a bad play.
Yeah, and that's something that I find interesting when it comes to play design and all that, because is Van Pelt just running that Cleveland Browns offense?
It doesn't feel like it. Stefanski's offense is way more creative.
Yeah, and that's it. So is this like his thing? I don't know. It's something to kind of monitor going forward. Look, the texter's right. You don't have to run the ball to be effective at play action. But when your running game, especially what you say you're going to be good at zone-wise, is not a threat, then it does hurt you, right? Like you have to at least be somewhat of a threat.
You look at Minnesota in particular, right? They are a heavy play action team with Sam Darnold, the quarterback. And it is more successful because Aaron Jones has been good at running the football. And they, as a team, have been good at running the football. Now, you could still run play action, though, without running the football. Look at Joe Burrow. They did it in Cincinnati they've done it for Cincinnati the last 3 years. Burrow hates being under center. So instead they run play action from shotgun and then they throw the football. Like, you can do it. It's just a matter of scheming it up and being prepared to do it.
Yeah, it is definitely that. And they do have a game, though, the Patriots.
Yes, they do.
Tomorrow, and this is an interesting one because the Jets are in a really bad spot.
Yes, they are.
2-5 after that loss. Patriots are obviously in a really bad spot after that loss. And I think this game has some really interesting matchups for the Patriots. And the Jets are a team, they just made a coaching change. And before we get deeper into this game, we have on line one, Coach in New Hampshire, who wants to talk about a potential coaching change. Coach, what do you got for us?
What I got for you guys is, please get on board with me in rooting for the Detroit Lions to win the Super Bowl this year. When that happens, Ben Johnson will have accomplished everything he wanted to accomplish by staying with the Lions as their OC, and he should be the perfect marriage for Drake May because he once played at UNC, and he's an offensive genius of which we don't have even a sniff of at this point. That's my plan, and I want to know what you guys think.
Appreciate it, Coach.
I love Ben Johnson.
I did pick the Lions to win the Super Bowl, so I really hope that comes true. I did, but look, they're not. Sorry, folks. They're not making a coaching change this year.
No.
They're just not.
It's interesting because guys like Mike Florio will tell you that Gerard Mayo could talk his way out of this job.
Yeah.
And I guess it's technically on the table, but I just feel like that it would be such a bad look for Robert Kraft to be like, yeah, I picked this guy 5 years ago to be my next head coach, and then he lasts a season.
That's also interesting, too. I picked this guy 5 years ago, so when he had never coached.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that good process?
No, it's horrible process. But then again, that's exactly why they didn't have interviews. They didn't do any of that. This has all been bad process.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
You're 100% right.
But if there's going to be a coaching change, it's going to be an offensive coordinator, and it's going to be at GM. Like, those would be the two spots to me that are clear possibilities to be different heading into next season. I think as much as it may be tough, because I just don't know how much control he has garnered at this point, you're going to get another year of Jerron Mayo.
Yeah, and to me, there's a few reasons why you're going to get another year. First of all, let's be fair, it's only 7 games, right?
Yep.
He can be a lot better. There's plenty of examples of coaches
Drake
who are
bad. Drake May can bail him out.
And there's plenty of examples of coaches that had a really bad first year and got better. And I know there's examples of coaches that had a bad first year and stayed bad, but it's only 7 games. But I think the other two reasons are the bigger reasons here. Number one, and we need to never lose sight of this, the biggest reason they are not good is the roster. He has a really bad roster,
yep,
especially offensively, so there's no matter what, there's a ceiling. And look, if Mike Vrabel or Brian Flores or Bill Belichick was coaching the Patriots, would they have a better record? I think so.
Probably.
Would they be a great team?
No.
I don't, because the offensive roster is so bad. And they've had Barmore out, Juwan Bentley out. Like, those are
countless injuries.
Yes. And look, the defense has played bad. They've been bad in their gaps. They've been bad tackling. I'm not excusing that. But this roster is bad, especially offensively. So that's really, to me, that's the biggest reason. But the other reason, and you hit on it, do we honestly think that the Krafts are going to fire the greatest coach of all time, and then a year later said, oh, we screwed up that succession plan. We were totally wrong.
No chance. It's a better chance of everybody else around Jerod Mayo getting fired before he does.
Yeah, that's the thing. If there's going to be changes on the coaching staff, it's not going to be head coach. And I don't think it's going to be defensive coordinator either. I think they really believe in Covington, and he's young.
I also think that that's Jerod Mayo's guy, right? So Jerod Mayo will go to the mat for DeMarcus Covington, where I don't think Jerod Mayo goes to the mat for AVP. He was not Jerod Mayo's first pick. It was not his guy. That seems like an Elliot Wolf selection. Yeah. He's not going to go to the mat for Elliot. Like, Elliot has put this terrible roster in front of him and expected him to deal with it. So I don't think he goes to the mat for Elliot either. And then this special teams coordinator, you can take it or leave it. I don't care.
Yeah, and
he seems like a great guy. Jeremy Springer seems like an awesome dude. Hearing him on Jones and Keefe, but whatever. It doesn't. It's special teams units
at Texas A&M weren't that great. And then last year, the Rams, the only team DVOA lower special teams than the Patriots. So
yeah. But overall, I mean, outside of the punt return and the blocked field goal, overall, like, the special teams has been pretty good this year. Yeah. So, like, I'm not too worried about that.
Right, and I think that's something that as your roster gets better, you're also your special teams. Because who's playing on special teams? A lot of your
all the scrubs,
second string and third string guys who, if your roster has no good depth to begin with. So that's the thing. I think we have to be, it's tough to be fair when you're 1-6, but
and
if we're being
fair.
It's tough
to be patient when you're 1-6.
It is, and it's frustrating to me, but we are, like, it is a really bad roster when you do that.
It's awful.
We got Steve in Fall River here on line two. Steve, welcome into the program.
Welcome to you guys. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday.
So I think we're talking and wasting too much time talking about analyzing Jerod Mayo. I call him Coach Cliche. All these cliches. He probably talks too much. He probably regrets 3/4 of what he says. He'll get better at it. You've already said he's probably not going anywhere because the Crafts already anointed him and said they did it 5 years ago. But the rebuild that I lived through in 93, I was a season ticket holder in 91, so I saw the transition where they actually got rid of one entire front office and brought a new one in and a new coach led by Bill Parcells and a number one draft pick, and they were 1-11. And guess what? He had three number one picks up. Drew Bledsoe had three number one picks on the offensive line. Three number one picks. It stopped them from going 1-11 with Bill Parcells. But at the end of the season, we could see something was happening. I remember going through this with somebody else on the radio that remembers that season where they were getting incrementally better. They were still losing. But and maybe the eighth game, something got better. Their second game against the division opponent was a closer game. These are the things we got to see out of this team. And we actually are pretending that we're in a rebuild because guess what? We didn't change the front office. We have too many ties to the old regime, but let's just play along. We got to have some hope here that we have a rebuild going on. But the other thing is we need drafts that are more impactful than what it appears this first draft is. Never mind taking Drake May and not trading down and getting a couple of other impact players. So now we need more out of Drake May than could have been had we had a few other players. We got nobody else in the draft.
Thanks for the call, Steve. We only got a few minutes before break here. But to his point about the rebuild, that is something to watch because tomorrow's game against the Jets is your second game against a divisional opponent. And your first game against the Jets, you lose 24-3.
Got blown out.
Your tackling is awful. And another thing about that Jets game, too, coaching-wise, they start the game bringing a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers. He's carving him up. Then they switch to playing coverage, and they actually, I thought, did a much better job the rest of the game. But it took them until late in the second quarter to make that adjustment.
Yeah.
And then offensively, they come in trying to hammer play action, and it's not working, and it took them way too long to adjust. Do they adjust faster? Do they have a better plan going in? Like these, to Steve's point, I think these are things to look for because this second half of the year, you want to see, are they getting any better? Because the first half of the year, they haven't got better.
No.
Are they getting better? Are things a little closer? Because if not, then you have to have some hard conversations.
Luckily for the Patriots, like in my opinion, they did the hardest part. You found the quarterback, which is number one, far and away, the most difficult thing to get in the pro in pro football. Like that's the hardest thing to find, and you did it. So now it's a process of building upon that and determining who's the right guys to stay, who are the wrong guys to stay. You need to figure out in that receiving room, how many of those young receivers do you want on this roster next year? Do you want Polk? Do you want Baker? Do you want Booty? Do you want Douglas? Who do you want here? Osborne's going to be gone in the offseason. Kendrick Bourne will probably be gone or traded before the end of the season. Like, you have to figure that out. You have to figure out on the defense who are the young players you want to build around and keep moving forward, and then incorporate veterans alongside them. And so that it's not just a locker room of, you know, 22 to 27-year-olds who don't mind popping their mouths off. Like, that's what you need to do, and then you need to determine if your coaches are good enough. And it's like you lucked into the first step already. Now it's nut cutting time. You have to figure out, okay, what's good, what's bad around me, and we have to build towards that. And I think this Jets game is the perfect way to start looking at that. You're right. The adjustments are a big thing. Do they come out right away, stick Drake May in empty, and just like they're like, all right, the Jets have had three defensive backs out the last week or two. Let's just attack this secondary. Let's play to Drake's strengths and try and start fast like we did against Jacksonville. Or do they come out and try and run the ball into the offensive line and gain 2 yards to carry again?
Well, and what's interesting about that is this is a game they should have more success running the ball. Jets are 31st in run defense, 29th in yards per carry.
This defense is overrated.
Yeah, and I think it's a matchup for the Patriots where you should be able to run the ball better, but your point with the secondary injuries, you should be able to move the ball.
Yes.
You know, through the air in this game. And I want to see that. Like, do they look better than last time they played the Jets? Do they look better even than last week? Because I think, and I said this in August, I think you and I talked about it, the key for Patriots fans and for the organization is you want to leave this season feeling good about Drake May as your starting quarterback and Jerod Mayo is your head coach. And I think right now we feel pretty good about May, and there's still time to go.
Yep.
A lot of people, and I think some in that organization, do not feel good about Mayo as the head coach. And that's something that I think in, you know, what's there, 10 games left? That's something to really keep your eye on. Because, again, he's not going anywhere. They're not going to fire him. But you want to see, is there progress there going in? Because next year, and again, I'm not going to start talking about draft on October 25th. I'd rather.
Kelvin Banks looks pretty good.
But he does. Except against Georgia. But it's a pivotal offseason because you now have the guy in Drake May potentially. Can you actually start to really build around him? Can you add those pieces to help make you better and maybe challenge for a wild card spot in the next year or two? Can you do that? But you have to leave this season with a firm judgment on what you have in May and what you have in May.
What they need to do is do exactly what the Celtics did with Joe Mazzulla. It's bring in veteran guys around Jerod Mayo that are going to help usher him into being a good coach. If you really want him to succeed, that's what you need. And as much as he may love DeMarcus Covington and I like Covington, it may be that, okay, we need to bring in a veteran DC.
Just a veteran defensive line or linebacker guy, like a consultant. You know, I'm not saying they got to fire people, but can they? And let's not forget, and Dave DeGuglielmo made this point on Twitter the other day, a sneaky good Twitter follow, by the way. Hmm. And he was a Patriots O-line.
He's the O-line coach, right?
In 2014. He said, well, the Patriots now have the biggest coaching staff in the NFL. Why are these guys not getting better? And I think if you're going to have a big staff, I think you got to have maybe some more experienced voices beyond just Ben McAdoo.
Like, why can't you do what the Browns did? Call up Mike Vrabel and be like, hey, can you like a guy like Mike Vrabel. Yeah. I'm not saying Vrabel would do this,
but
call up a guy like Vrabel and be like, hey, can you just come help be a consultant with the defense? Talk with the DC, help him grow, figure things out. I mean, Pete Carroll's not doing anything. He might be a good guy to get in the building. Just to like get in the building and help out with some stuff. Like, it's such an incestuous league that guys that have been on jobs that just constantly get jobs. And you can find guys that are willing to just take a paycheck and help. And I think that's what you need to do. I mean, Saleh has been without a job for 2 weeks, and he's already in Green Bay helping LaFleur on the offensive side of the football. So there are plenty of guys out there that you could call with tons of experience that might be able to help your young coaching staff take the next step forward.
Yeah, even like we saw in Hard Knocks when the Bears had Nick Saban come out and meet with them. Like, it's just, I think that's something that looking back and you look at the staff, it's like they have this huge staff, but there's not a lot of guys you look at and you're like, okay, we know he's the real deal. Like, I like Covington, I think, and look, he's been shaky, but I think he'll be good. But we don't know for sure yet.
No, we have no idea.
We don't know on Van Pelt. We don't know on Springer. We don't know on these position coaches, a lot of them. Whereas when the Patriots were good, you had Bill and Brady, I get it. But you had Skarnecchia, you had Ivan Fears, you had Chad O'Shea, you had Brian Floyd. Like,
guys that have been here for
years.
I can
rattle off the names. Like, you had all these guys that were really good. Pepper Johnson for years. They were legit.
Billy O'Brien came up through the system.
Like,
Daniels was here a ton.
Like, as position coaches, like, they're the real deal. As coordinators, they're the real deal. Nick Cayley's, we mentioned him earlier. You knew he was a good tight ends coach. Like, you knew he was the real deal. Now, I think you have questions there. And that's something to look at. Because that's, again, I hate calling for people's jobs and all this and that. What I'm saying is you can augment this staff
absolutely
with much more experienced voices, for sure. But, Shine, we're almost there.
Woo! It's Bet a Paddle. Let's get it.
Yeah, this is your flu game. We have one more segment to go on the Scheim and Lions, Lions and Scheim, Joe Braverman show, and that'll be coming up next. Final segment of the Lions and Scheim, Scheim and Lions show. Shout out to Joe Braverman. Great job today, Joe. Did Fitzy and Mego, then Scheim and Lions. Great job by Joe Braverman, as always, behind the glass.
Good stuff, bud.
You can say thank you. It's okay.
Of course. I've got so many buttons, no, so many duties back here. You know Scheim.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
No, Joe, great job today. Fun show, despite the fact we had to talk negatively about the Patriots and Bruins.
It was apropos.
Yeah, it is. Hopefully, the Bruins, man. Oh,
you want a crazy positive take on the Patriots this weekend?
Talking off air. You have a crazy theory about tomorrow's game.
Can you think of anybody in the world that's picking the Patriots on Sunday?
Fitzy?
No, not
to
even
win
Fitzy.
Or to cover?
Anything.
No, I, not no, that I can
I'm taking
of.
Them to cover. Okay. I talked with Arkan yesterday. I thought it's not so much about the Pats, but it's just about the Jets.
Okay, so maybe Braverman's the one, but...
Essentially, you, no, like, he maybe one, yeah.
Were you a fan of the classic television sitcom Seinfeld?
I was.
There was an episode...
Curbed is better.
Where, so. Sure. Where there was an episode where George and Jerry were in the cafe, and George is like, everything I do in my life, every decision I've ever made has been wrong. And so Jerry says, well, if every instinct you have is wrong, then do the opposite. So this is my Seinfeld game. Where it's like everybody in the world thinks this is a get-right game for the Jets, and the Patriots suck. They're in a spiral. The receivers are talking out. The coach says the players are soft. Nobody knows what's going on. Bill Belichick's taking shots at his old team. Everything's in disarray. That's why you picked the Patriots this weekend.
Kind of like that Buffalo Bills game last year.
Well,
they
yeah.
won. They came, yeah.
Yeah, like when Mac Jones dominated the Bills there at home.
Went down at the end and won.
I was at that game. And so my thought is, too, is it's like, again, I look at Drake May and I'm like, this is the guy. This guy can play football. He now has two starts under his belt. And eventually, at some point this season, just because of how bad the rest of the team is, Drake May has to steal you a game. And that's when everybody will kind of get on board with me, that Drake May is the guy once he steals you a game by himself on his shoulders. And maybe that's this weekend. Maybe in the beat-up Jets secondary, Van Pelt just lets the kid rip it, just like, hurling the rock left, right, and center, moving the chains, moving the ball down the field, maybe gets a couple design runs in there. All of a sudden, a couple play action bootlegs, hitting a deep shot or two, and all of a sudden, like, everybody's back on the high again. Everybody's like, okay, we got something. And so, like, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, it's like, this is the ultimate Costanza spot because everybody expects horrid football on Sunday. Horrid. I think... you said you want to see something scary, tune in at 1 o'clock when you were talking to Fitzy
horror
earlier.
Movie, yes.
Maybe it's not.
Or maybe it's the Jets horror movie.
Maybe it's a movie with a silver lining. Maybe it's a movie of hope.
If you believe it.
I was actually going to use that line.
So look, I think Sunday may be the Costanza game. It might be. I had a good feeling about Thursday night football. Vikings coming off that tough game against the Lions. You get beat up, and then you have to go short rest to L.A. where they're getting receivers back. I'm like, I like the Rams. Rams came out on top. Stafford was awesome. That's a game Stafford went and won for the Rams. Maybe, just maybe, this is a game where Drake May comes out and wins it for the Pats.
And Braverman,
does that mean you're making a bet on the Patriots?
I might.
Braverman brought up a good point that as bad as the Patriots are in all, what we've said, the Jets are in a really bad place too. I mean, they fire their coach and they look just
that's
as bad,
saying.
If not worse.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, and look, Davante Adams is there. I expect he'll be better, but he was targeted 9 times in that Sunday night game. Only 3 catches.
They didn't score a single point in the second half.
Yeah, like that's a team that's in a bad. And I think there's guys on that defense that have had enough of Aaron Rodgers.
Well, because right now that offense is just like two things. It's run the ball with Breece Hall. Or line up in shotgun, Rodgers kind of do his thing, and then either throw it to Garrett Wilson or Davante Adams. And, like, there's nothing else that goes on with that offense. Yeah. And so maybe you can take advantage of that. Maybe it's a get-right game for your Patriots a little bit. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying that there's a chance. I think there's more of a chance than people give him credit for.
I do think it's going to be much more competitive than the Thursday night game in week
2. I agree. I don't think it's going to be 24-3.
No, and part of that was you went on the road and you played bad and it was short week, all that stuff, right? But I think it's going to be much more competitive. I can see a path to the Patriots winning. I actually think they can run the ball effectively in this game. I'd like to see them push the ball in the middle of the field because you mentioned those Jets secondary injuries. Push it because they've hit booty on the outside a few times, but push it in the middle of the field.
The big the big plays. Braverman asked if I was betting on the Pats. I don't know if I'll be confident enough to do that, but the two bets I love, over 41, because I think both teams can score a little bit, and both defenses are bad, and then Hunter Henry over 32.5 yards receiving. And, of course, Drake May over passing yards at 213.5. So there you go.
All right. And you'll be back tomorrow morning for Football Sunday.
Yep, that's the plan. Football Sunday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And I will be back Tuesday night at 6 p.m. with KJ Carson. Shime, it was a pleasure today.
Always a pleasure, Lions. You're the best.
You have a great day. And all of you who listen, thank you. Have a great day. We got more football coverage coming up next.
See ya.